100 days on the place, yeah, man. It's a kick it, you know. That's right.
Yeah, me rolling and rock it to the beat, and me love the sound.
Oh, Chess, you can mess with the sound. Better grab your girl, your posse, and gather round.
Yeah, me rolling and bobbing and going like a mad man. Oh, the man got the studio for 19 or long, so me say.
Hey, 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 Digital Sister back. Hope you had a great week. I hope, you know, despite everything and the chaos that's going on in the world in the Middle East, that you were still able to have a good week. I was a little upset about all of this because I was just beginning to have a following in Haifa, Israel. But since the crisis of about a week ago, I haven't heard from my friends in Haifa as well as other places in the Middle East. And just want you to know that we're praying for you, and we hope that this conflict somehow can be resolved and come to an end fairly quickly, so it's not an extended situation. And for me, for selfish reasons, so I will have my friends back in Haifa who've been downloading Digital Sister. Our prayers are for you, and, you know, we're keeping our fingers crossed that things will improve and get better. But anyway, let me get back to what I was talking about last week, which I find very interesting. It shows I have a good nose for news. I was talking last week about hip-hop fiction in the previous podcast and how it's the next big bling in publishing. Well, sure enough, there's an article in USA Today by Yolanda Young talking about the very same thing, except her position, I think, is a little bit more bourgeois, shall we say. Bougie, shall we say. Her feeling is that gangster lit is really poison. And she's talking about how Fitty is going to be partnering with MTV Pocketbooks to create graphic novels, you know, gangster lit, just as explicit as many of the lyrics of his song. I say kudos to him for branching out and finding other business opportunities. What columnist Yolanda Young kind of talks about, and I think she's going for that kind of, you know, bougie, sedate, black middle class thing, but she's talking about how the literacy rates for African Americans and Latinos are declining. But I think we ought to put a different spin on this, because if there's something out there that some of the young men can relate to, and they're willing to pick up a book, despite what's in it, but they're willing to pick up a book and read it, I think that is great, because that lets us know that major publishing may not be doing anything that speaks to them. But there's a new niche, this gangster lit, which does. And I don't agree with her comments, but she says when people read this gangster lit, readers ingest poison when metaphor and imagery are replaced with sex, violence, and expletives. Well, like, where was she, you know, a couple years ago when these books about rich white women, you know, screwing everybody in the world, were very popular? And I know this to be true because I read a number of them. Remember Judith Krantz with Scruples? Let's not forget Jackie Collins and all of her Hollywood stories. And let's not forget the ultimate, the original diva, Jacqueline Suzanne, who wrote a number of books back in the 60s that were very popular. Remember Valley of the Dolls? Well, I mean, they were talking about a lot of stuff. There was a lot of sex in those books. There was drugs in those books. But was it okay because it was rich white women? You know, so we have to be careful and not get culturally confused, as my friend Dr. Gwendolyn Goldsby Grant, who's the Essence magazine columnist, talks about. Let's talk about that. Hey, at least now there's a niche that's reaching a group that pretty much was being overlooked. She talks about how a lot of the gangster lit, again, much like the mixtapes, is done with guerrilla marketing. You may find the books at car washes, you know, at street vendor tables or martini parties. And again, some of the titles I think are kind of cute. You know, G-Spot, Bad Girls, G-I-R-L-Z, Payback is a Mother, things like that are showing up in mainstream publisher catalogs, which speaks to the fact that the publishing industry needs something to bring new profits, and we have a market of underserved populations who want to read something that they can relate to. I think I commend Vicki Stringer, who was kind of, I think, the person who kind of founded this whole gangster lit thing. You know, she was in prison from 1994 to 2001 for drug trafficking. And what she did, you know, she didn't just while away her time, you know, and, you know, become Muslim or whatever else people do when they're locked up for a couple of years. She decided to do something positive, which I commend her for. She self-published her first novel called Let That Be the Reason, which depicts the lives of women in drug trafficking. And in 2001, you know, when she got out of jail, she founded Triple Crown Publication, which apparently is the book company of choice for gangster lit. And, you know, instead of the commentary from Yolanda Young slamming this whole gangster lit phenomenon, I think we ought to put a different spin on it and commend, you know, people like Vicki Stringer, because they're entrepreneurs. You know, she created a whole nother genre that is getting the attention of major publishing houses. I think we need to be commending Vicki for being entrepreneurial, because what she's done is she's created a publishing company. She's got employees, and these are people probably that are young people who are learning how to be involved in the publishing business. So, you know, she's doing a great thing. And I think, again, sometimes some of the bougies in our areas tend to want to always downplay and be negative about things, but they always want to commend, you know, majority people for doing other things. And, you know, I think that has to stop. I think, you know, we have to commend people who find a new niche. We have to commend people who are being entrepreneurial. We have to commend people who are creating a product to fill a niche of underserved people that the major, you know, publication houses were not doing. So, you know, I really don't see anything wrong with it. And again, we have the issue of choice. If we don't want to read it, you don't buy it. Okay, it's as simple as that. If you don't want to see it, you know, make sure you drive by it. You know, you have the ability to choose. If this is not your cup of tea, don't buy it. But I don't think you should slam it just because it's not exactly your cup of tea. I commend Vicki Stringer for publishing this book and creating a publishing house and creating a business that is thriving. And she's probably employing a lot of young black kids in her publishing. You know, probably something that Yolanda Young is not doing. She's too busy slamming people, you know. But again, I think it's great. And if I get a chance to come across one of these titles, I'm going to pick it up, and then we're going to talk about it during the podcast. But again, very interesting that it was in a local newspaper, The Plain Dealer in Cleveland, Ohio, and then maybe a week later, information about it shows up in USA Today. So that says it's an interesting topic. I sniffed it out for us to talk about, and there it is. Now check this out. And again, talking about how hip-hop has really just filtered into mainstream media. Now, here's Pharrell. Pharrell, whose last name is Williams. I didn't know his last name was Williams. But he's, you know, there's an article about him in USA Today and also a review of his new CD. I like his music, and I like the way he thinks. As a matter of fact, talking about his new CD, which is called In My Mind, he has a mixture of hip-hop and R&B tracks, and which he says are, and I quote, for the small society of people who think for themselves, it's all about individuality. And he's absolutely right. You have to put something out there, but again, it's up to you to decide whether or not you want to buy it or whether or not you want to listen to it. And I remember he had a great hit with Gwen Stefani a little while ago. You know, can I have it like that? Can I have it like that? I mean, very cool, very jazzy, you know. But apparently, he's one of those great producers who does a lot of good work behind the scenes and is very well known for orchestrating great music and putting together, you know, rappers, putting together the producers, putting together the right people to come up with a good product. Interestingly enough, he has a little alter ego called Skateboard P, and he sponsors, which I didn't know, a nationally touring ice cream skate team. And interestingly enough, he also has a clothing line called Billionaire Boys Club Clothing Line and Ice Cream Brand Sneakers. They're very pretty colored sneakers. And he has a shop. He opened a boutique in Tokyo last November, and he's planning to open up another one in New York in 2007. So, you know, the brother is out here doing it. He's making music, but he's doing great business deals, which a lot of the rappers are doing, you know. And I do like his new song that he has out with Kanye West. I think it's called Number One. It's kind of cool. And it's interesting, too, because Pharrell also made Esquire's 2005 Best Dressed Men in the World list. Kanye West was number three. So that's kind of interesting that here he is, a fashion plate, as well as a businessman, as well as a good rapper. But I like his music. I like the way he thinks. And, you know, I wish him well, and I hope he continues to bring us more music and more intelligence to the whole hip-hop scene. Kudos to you, Pharrell. We like your music. We like your music. We like your music. Now, let me move on, because I thought this is very interesting. You hear about the news and how fat the kids are today, and everybody's wringing their hands about what they're going to do about this. Well, check this out. Apparently, there's a whole new trend out there called Advergames, and a lot of the food companies are marketing their products on websites and kind of wrapping them in games, and they're targeted to kids. Check this out. It's very interesting. Like, for instance, there's a site, Oreo.com, has a jingle contest for songs about Oreo cookies. McDonald's Ronald.com has pages for kids to color. Cap'nCrunch.com promotes Quaker Oats cereals and offers screensavers. And basically, what this whole trend is called, it's called branded entertainment involving food, which is, you know, very interesting. So the study was done by Entertainment Media and Health, and looking at what's going on. Now, check out some of these stats, because I think they're just very, very interesting. The study found that there's some 77 websites for major food products, and they had 4,000 pages designed for kids. The sites received about 12.2 million visits from children ages 2 to 11 during a 3-month period in 2005. I mean, that is incredible to me. I mean, 2-year-olds are online, you know, being attracted to what the food companies are marketing. Now, further statistics. 53% of the sites have commercials, webisodes, which are serialized cartoons or TV shows featuring products or characters. 64% use viral marketing, you know, and they urge children to email their friends with a link to the site. Some 38% have incentives for children to buy food and to get access to special games or prizes. Another 25% offer children under 12 a membership so they can receive information about special offers, new commercials, and new brands. I mean, this is just like fascinating and mind-boggling to me. But this shows the power of the internet, and it shows how you know, major companies are being very creative in how they market to kids. That's what the cigarette companies were doing with, you know, Joe Cool, the Camel guy, and that kind of thing, the Marlboro Man, et cetera, et cetera. But isn't that pretty incredible that so much is being done, and just how many visits are made to these websites by kids who are young? very interesting. So again, you can't really talk about too much of the obesity problem with the kids, because here are companies who are doing everything in their power to figure out ways to utilize new media to market directly to kids. And if kids are on the computers going to these websites, you know, they don't necessarily need their parents. They can just go right to the website, figure out what they want, and probably tell their parents what to get when they go out shopping. So again, I think we have to get down to the power of choice, and parents and adults or older friends, you know, you have to talk to the kids and help them explain what's going on. The reality is they're just having fun and figuring out new ways to play, but the companies have the ulterior motive to sell and market their food directly to kids. So again, it's the power of choice. That's the word for the podcast today, power of choice. Now, check out a new trend, the reality shows. I, for one, you know, would love to see more television with sitcoms and some actual characters and storylines. But the trend right now seems to be reality shows because, you know, they're cheap to produce. You don't have to pay any big stars. You can just have people eat worms or, you know, crawl in a tank full of leeches or, you know, anything disgusting like that. So it costs really nothing to produce the show. But it seems as though reality TV is now trying to move into the realm of spirituality with shows like The Messengers on the Learning Channel. TLC launched The Monastery, in which five men and five women, you know, kind of grapple with the rigors of living in a monastery for 40 days. Then there was A&E that aired God or the Girl, about four men struggling to determine whether God has called them to the Roman Catholic priesthood or will they go for the girl, as if there's some kind of timeline for this. So it's kind of interesting that this kind of television is finding a niche with spirituality. Probably the interesting thing is going to have to see if it pans out, if the people who are on these shows really believe the way they believe and that they're actually, you know, walking the walk. But I tend to think, as some of the people talked about with the article, if you're mixing in money and, you know, gifts and fabulous trips and all that, you know, it possibly may dilute the spirituality of the person. But, you know, that remains to be seen. If, you know, a person's commitment and, you know, call to the faith is genuine, that's one thing. But if people are, you know, really faking it just to get on the show for their 15 minutes of fame and win some fabulous prize, and I think the whole issue of the spirituality will be kind of lost. So, you know, it'll be interesting to see how these shows pan out on the various, you know, cable networks. Very interesting. And just kind of interesting to see what types of things will come out of it. Because basically it seems to me that all the shows have a common thread to find somebody who stands out as, you know, quote, the spiritual one. The one who's been called, you know, the strongest. So it'll be interesting to see, you know, how that pans out. And is that something that people will really turn into in droves, you know, to see? Now, another interesting thing that I thought was kind of funny, it's not anything serious, but I just thought it was funny. There was a Burmese python, you know, I can't remember where its city he was in, but he was a python, and some you know, family had this Burmese python as a pet. So they kept them, you know, in the tank, wherever they keep them, and they kept a blanket, an electric blanket in there, you know, to keep them warm. Well, apparently, you know, the python ate the blanket, ate the whole blanket. And so he had to go in, you know, to a veterinarian and have surgery done to remove the blanket and remove the cord and all of that. Apparently, you know, he's going to be fine, but it was just interesting to me that, you know, that this python ate the blanket that was in his I don't want to say cage, but in his tank to keep him warm. So that just goes to show you, you know, you never know what's going to happen. Thank God it wasn't, you know, something more serious or something that really, really killed him. But I thought that was kind of funny. A little light levity for the podcast. Now, there was another study, which I found very interesting, that kind of contradicts the whole issue about how black women and white women feel about their body image. Well, apparently, there isn't much difference. And what they're saying right now is psychologists are now seeing a rise of African-American women, Hispanic women, I hate that word Hispanic, but Latino women, and Asian women who are coming in with eating disorders, you know, much like, you know, the white girls were a few years ago. Because why? Because what's happening is, you know, black chicks, Latina chicks, and Asian chicks are buying in to the European image of being, as I call it, upwardly mobile image, which means ultra, ultra thin. So, you know, they're going through all this stuff, vomiting, starving themselves, you know, to have that ultra thin look. Much like the upwardly mobile that you see on the catwalk at the famous fashion shows and in all the magazines, you know, that are on the newsstands. So that's very interesting. And the psychologist says they rarely, in her 25 years of experience, excuse me, minority patients were very rare up until about 10 years ago. And now they're, you know, they're seeing more and more women of color coming in, you know, trying to figure out ways to become real thin, you know, and be upwardly mobile like the images that they see on TV. You know, I don't know what to say about that except, wow, I think it just shows how powerful the marketing of the majority image to other groups is. I mean, that is what is accepted. That is what people strive for. And if you're not trying to get, you know, real thin, then, you know, you're nobody. I mean, a perfect example of that is, you know, Star Jones. You know, she was fairly obese, fairly heavy, but in her time on being on The View, you know, since she's gone now, she probably in the last, I guess, 2 years took off a lot of weight. Again, striving for that upwardly mobile image of ultra thin. And she's pretty thin now. I think she's down to about a size 8, you know, versus weighing over, you know, 300 pounds. But again, same thing. Hers was for health. And things like that. But I think with her issue and the fact that she was being, you know, so secretive about what she did to gain this new thinness is the thing that people were kind of upset about. You know, just say what you had done. You know, you had to have liposuction. You know, you had to have a gastric surgery because there's no way in hell that you're going to lose, you know, 100 plus pounds in like 2 years with regular means. I mean, not saying it's impossible, but I'm just saying it's going to take some time. And so really, yes, she had the obesity and health issues, but, you know, she was on TV, so she had to make herself fit in with the types of people that she's socializing with. And for the most part, when you look at a lot of the society pages and things like that, you see real thin, skinny white women, because that's what they go for. So in any event, it's very interesting that despite differences in race, differences in economic factors, when it really comes down to body image, white women and women of color, they're very much hand in hand. There isn't much difference. Wouldn't that be nice if that could apply to so many other issues, where race seems to come up. It would be really, really nice if we could find, you know, more common, more positive ground with issues of race. But I thought that was very interesting that that's what's going on. Well, let's see. I think that's about it for now. And I'm thanking everyone for continuing to tune in. I love hearing from you. Again, give me a call at 206-309-7325 so you can weigh in on some of the things that I pick to talk about, because I would really love to hear from you, and I would love to hear from people who are all over the place tuning in to Digital Sister. So again, call me at 206-309-7325. And when you check my homepage, the show page, you know, click on the part to become a fan. And then look at where the podcast is being downloaded, because we have a map where you can see that. Okay, so become a fan. Let me hear from you. And again, keep tuning in to Digital Sister and do the viral marketing thing. You know, send an email to a friend so that Digital Sister will continue to grow and I will continue to be heard all over the world. So thanks for tuning in. I'm going to find some more interesting things for us to talk about, and I will be back with you in a couple of days. Have a great week, and know that I'm always finding interesting things for you. Take it easy.
Can't mess with this.